I'd like to read a part of one of the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam for this evening, Canto 7, Chapter 5, where Prahlad is speaking with his father, Hiranyakashipu. And the famous verse, I think many of you know the verse, the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. So I'll say the verse and you can respond, and then I'll just read some section. And what the topic is, that I'd like to speak about, is the importance of very carefully studying, learning, and living the teachings of our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. And we'll start with Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Smaranam Pada Sevanam. Archanam Vandanam Dasyam. Sakyam Atmani Vedanam. There's a second verse that's less known, but I'll just read the Sanskrit. Iti Pangsarpita Vishnu. Bhakti Shenavalakshana Kriyeta Bhagavat Yatha Tanmanye Vidam Uttamam. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, surrendering everything unto Him. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he or she has acquired complete knowledge. So the setting, we all know, Hiranyakashipu very affectionately placed his small son on his lap with tears in his eyes, affectionately asking his son, what's the best thing you've learned in school? And this is the best thing he's learned, devotional service. His father didn't like the answer. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes about the two, or all nine. I'll read from the first two, Shravanam, and then Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Shravanam, hearing of the holy name of the Lord, or Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name of the Lord is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Thus my hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand His transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee further advances toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form, qualities, paraphernalia, and everything pertaining to Him. Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. This same process of chronological understanding holds true for chanting and remembering. When the chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of the pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee. Paragraph. Hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendently full of mellows. The transcendental holy name of the Lord may be heard and chanted accordingly to the attraction of the devotee. Hare Krishna. Thank you. One may chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, or may chant the holy name of Lord Rama, or Nrisimhadev. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attracted to Krishna should chant and hear from pure devotees who are also attracted to Lord Krishna. Same principle applies for devotees attracted to Lord Rama, Lord Nrisimha, and other forms of the Lord. Because Krishna is the ultimate form of the Lord. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. It is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, and pastimes from a realized devotee who is particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Shukadeva Goswami have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that one chant the holy name of Krishna. Seems to be repeating himself. Maybe it's on purpose. If one is fortunate enough to hear from the mouth of realized devotees, he is very easily successful on the path of devotional service. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11, there is this verse, Tadbhag Vasargo Janata Aga Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokam Abhadya Vatsapi Namanya Nantasha Yushon Katanya Srivanti Gayati Krinanti Sadavaha. Verses describing the name, form, and qualities of Anantadev, the unlimited Supreme Lord, are able to vanquish all the sinful reactions of the entire world. Therefore, even if such verses are improperly composed, devotees hear them, describe them, and accept them as bona fide and authorized. In this connection, Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. If there is no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. And that's the end of the hearing section. And the chanting section is even longer. One of the, scripturally speaking, one of the duties of a sannyasi is, besides living a life of detachment, the primary is the duty is living a life of attachment to Krishna and traveling from place to place, village to village, town to town, and giving association to those who are householders or those who stay in one place, and deliver the message of attachment to Krishna. In other words, engage others in the process of hearing and chanting. And by their example of life, show the principle of detachment from things of this world and the principle of attachment to Krishna. Although ashrams may be different, the principle applies in all circumstances. And this we learn from scripture, from Bhishmadev's teaching to Yudhisthira, that from the beginning of education, or any education is real education, even if education comes later, the essence of education is this attachment to Krishna, detachment from matter, regardless of one's circumstances. One may manage that attraction for material energy differently depending upon ashram situation, but the essence of life is these activities of hearing and chanting about the personality of Godhead. Because it cleanses, just like the Chaito Darpana Marjanam, aside from the holy name, cleanses the heart. The same thing is said of the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. It cleanses the heart. Cleanses the dirty things from the heart. Prabhupada here has said that the dirty modes of nature. So, I wanted to speak on this topic because I find, well, several things. I find the process of hearing and chanting is very nice. And it works. It works for anyone who applies it. It works. And because for starters, just as the Shikshastakam verse says, it cleanses the heart. It makes the heart pure. And in that pure condition, one can then more easily receive spiritual understanding or a spiritual conception of life. In this world, there's so much suffering, and the suffering is due to ignorance, and suffering is completely unnecessary. All varieties of suffering, they're completely unnecessary. And it's like Prahlad Maharaj says about his condition, his suffering is seeing the suffering of others. His unhappiness is seeing the unhappiness of others. And that unhappiness of others is completely unnecessary. And how to change the course of that unhappiness. There's so many things. In life, that people do to, on the one hand, increase happiness, on the other hand, diminish suffering. Largely, almost entirely, those processes are based on a material conception. And while they may give some relief from the suffering and bring in something that looks like happiness, it's not enduring because it's not on the spiritual platform. But the nature of hearing and chanting is the very sound vibration itself is of the spiritual world. How to say this succinctly? How do we go from a material conception to a spiritual conception? If we were to operate, live our lives with spiritual conception, we'd be a lot happier. And in our lives, even, you know, it's cold or whatever it is that we're dealing with, something was going this way and then suddenly it's going that way and everything turns upside down. So that's disconcerting when that happens. Or a little, so many things that are causes of disturbance. How do we remain happy or undisturbed even when there's causes of disturbance? Because here we are, the material world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, by design. And the designer can't be outsmarted and make it something else. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's a place of dukkha, by design, a place of distress. And we want sukha and we're finding dukkha, so what to do? We can't make the place that has problems, fundamental birth, death, disease, old age, and all the other ones that follow those. We can't make those miseries nice, like it's cold. We could move to some other climate, but then we'll find some other difficulty in some other climate because it's just it's the nature of the place. And we'll resign ourselves to the fact that the place has duality and it has its mix of seemingly attractive and seemingly unattractive circumstances. It's an endless struggle. Daivihiyesha gunamayi mamaya duratyaya. Endless. So how do you deal with that? And there's so many ways people go about dealing with it. But the Bhagavatam and the Srimad Bhagavatam, scripture is advising us rise above it or go beyond it. We go beyond it by surrendering unto Krishna. And of course we're devotees and that's what our lives is made up of. But we're less skilled or more skilled. We're intermittent in our being successful. We're unsteady in our application of the transcendental principles of life. And therefore, sometimes happiness, sometimes distress. The director of the Bhaktivedanta Hospital shared with me, because I asked him to, a PowerPoint where he wrote it in Hindi. I forget what the Hindi phrase is. But the title of his little PowerPoint is, and it's not just because of the hospital, it's about life. A little bit of happiness and a lot of distress. However you say that in Hindi. And, you know, giving details and details and details and details. And that the opportunity that Srila Prabhupada provided through his, besides or in addition to the chanting of the holy name, his Bhaktivedanta purports are so sublime. They're filled with very simply presented bits of transcendental knowledge or spiritual potency is fully invested in that transcendental knowledge in the Hittas purports, that if one reads them carefully and regularly, something happens. Your besides the modes of nature operating in your life change, like towards the mode of goodness, nashta prayeshu, abhadreshu, nityam bhagavata sevaya, the inclination to serve Krishna, the clarity of who is Krishna, your whole besides the conceptions change, your whole experience, seeing according to those and experiencing according to those conceptions, your whole experience of this place changes. And it's nice. I'll just share two little things. I decided that this year I wanted to spend some time, like extended time, whenever I have time, for studying Sri Brahma Samhita. And Sri Brahma Samhita is one of those books that the language of it is so difficult. Very rarely has anybody read the book, and if anyone has read the book, they'll be scratching their heads saying, I don't understand it. It's that type of literature. But Prabhupada said as early as 1969 that in a letter to Pradyumna Prabhu, that my disciples should learn this book. And it's the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's Srimad Bhagavatam's essence in a small book. It's very wonderful. So by reading through that book and listening to lectures of others who have spoken on the book, it's when you unpack it, it's not so difficult. It's very nice. But the language of Bhakti Siddhanta is such that it's difficult. And Prabhupada has presented when reading through the, so I'm just, this is an appreciation, reading through Prabhupada's books and reading through very carefully those that have commented on Bhaktisiddhanta's writing, which comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, which is based on Jiva Goswami's commentary, so it's nothing original. Prabhupada has presented the same teachings in such a simple form. I think of it as like smoothie or baby food. All the nutrients that a baby needs is in baby food. It's just pureed and it's so smooth that it's the digestive power of the child, which is not so strong in the beginning, they can digest it. And they get their nutrition from the baby food, from pablum. Prabhupada has pablumized very, very elevated teachings, very pure and powerful teachings, made them so accessible. And all the nourishment for achieving the spiritual goal of life is there. Then another appreciation. Someone is presently teaching Nectar of Devotion. And when we cover Bhakti Shastri course, we only go up to chapter 19, because the later chapters are higher stages of bhakti than apply to us at present. But mainly sadhana bhakti and how to practice sadhana bhakti. A little look at what Raghunuga bhakti is and so forth, but up to chapter 19. And a devotee that's preparing to teach Nectar Devotion is reading also Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the commentaries of our acharyas and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And similarly, it's way up there. And then to see how very simply Prabhupada has presented the messages, which are so sublime. When you absorb yourself in these sublime messages, you feel sublime. You feel not just as chapter one of Nectar Devotion says, relief from material distress. But the beginning of all auspiciousness is coming into your life. You feel it. And especially when these subject matters are discussed in the association of devotees. It literally takes away the unwanted part of our material life, of our experience of life. It takes it away and replaces it with the sublime feature for which we're always hankering. It's like that. Just a little anecdotal, but in one of our in the suburbs of Chicago, they have bhakti vriksha groups. And one time I was visiting, so they had several bhakti vriksha groups meet together in one place. And the way that they begin their meetings is they call it icebreaker. Because during the week, people have been all over, you know, Timbuktu and with their dealing with the material energy. So to bring them back into focus, there's the icebreaker where the question is, was there something that you experienced in the course of this past week that helped you connect with Krishna and gave you some realization about the process of devotional service? So one person immediately raised his hand. He was eager to share. And he's a man from South India, and he said, since I was a small boy, I've been always attracted to learn Bhagavad Gita. So whenever there were Bhagavad Gita study groups, I took part in them, since I was a small boy. And I can say that I've never really understood Bhagavad Gita. And So I moved here to this area, and I heard there's a Bhagavad Gita study group, so I said, sure, you know, I've done it since I'm a kid, I'll join that one too. And I've been coming now for about 2.5 months. I'm not so experienced, but something that I find is I'm now starting to understand Bhagavad Gita. And the things that I read before, which I never understood, now the message is there, but now the understanding is there. And it's not just the understanding is there. He said, I feel better about myself and my life. And then in particular, he was like on a roll. He was getting really excited and said, for example, I have an anger problem. And everyone went, oh, he's got an anger problem. He said, you know, not one of those that I just like go in a rage and tirade and scare everybody. But like at work, you know, people do mean things to each other at work. Those of you at work see that happen, I'm sure. And he said, I would get angry. And when I get angry, then it would make me ineffective at work, in the workplace, because I'd just be absorbed in that mood of being angry. Why do people do this to each other and stuff like that? But since I've been taking part in this, I'm not feeling that same anger. You know, some of the same things are happening. I just don't experience it in the same way. And it surprises me. And then not only it surprises me because I'm not carried away by that anger, but then I can think, well, how can I be of service to the others so they can be less like that rather than just getting angry, which doesn't help anybody, myself included. So I see it's just because of this going into the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita and the association of other devotees. It's changing my life. You know, then he stopped and everybody almost like gave him applause because this testimonial of the impact of hearing carefully and trying to understand and sharing with other devotees and then applying. Because that's one of the things in those bhakti vriksha groups is at the very end, okay, we learned something. Now how do we best apply it? And one of the rules, what not to do, is to say, other people should do this. It would make life better for me if other people would do this. That's a no-no. Yes is, how can I apply this in my life and make my life better? How can I become a better person? by applying this message. And by applying it, it happens kind of naturally. It's an extra step to apply it. But Shrinvanti, this is Prabhupada quotes in this purport, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadhavaha. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti. You hear, you chant, and it naturally follows that you bring it within yourself. Gayanti. Shrinvanti Gayanti. Grananti. You internalize. You live your life according to that message. That's what happens. When the process of hearing and chanting, hearing pure sound vibration, vibrating that pure sound vibration, sharing your understandings and appreciations with others of like-minded disposition who wish to become situated in the spiritual conception of life, especially when guided by qualified persons who have contact with that spiritual sound vibration, have done so in a qualitative way and can lead the discussion and the hearing and chanting process. But even just amongst one another, if that's the basis of relationships, that's what spiritual relationships are, where Krishna is in the center. Ideally, Krishna is in the center, and establishing Krishna in the center by sharing with one another what one has read and heard and understood. And as the more we can do like that, the quality of our life changes. Not just after this life I'll go to a good place, or during this lifetime, because I've done these pious things, I'll prosper. It's not a fruitive spirit. I'll prosper in this life and even more so in the next life. But rather, the spiritual quality of my life changes. It's something like what I'm trying to say here, or another way of saying the same thing is going at the root of the disease is the best way to rid one of a disease. And the disease of material existence is forgetfulness of God. It's deliberate. We've Bahir Mukha Jeev. Jiva Goswami raises this question in his Bhakti Sandarbha. Nice question. Why does a living entity come into the material condition in the first place? Because if we understand that, then we understand how to get out of the material condition. Like, if you're in a place, what was the entry way through which you got into the place if you want to get out? If there's a fire, there's the exit door. It's a big sign over the exit door. It's a lock. That's the exit door. So that's the place from which we've come into the material existence tells us that's the way to get out of material existence. It's very simple. And what has brought us into material existence is, he looks at a number of different things, but some people say this, that, and the other thing, and the conclusion he reaches is, according to scripture, Bahir Mukha Jeev, the living entity has, Bahir Mukha, has turned attention away from the Supreme. By turning our attention away from the Supreme, it's like seeing the light and turning your back to the light, and instead you see shadow. You don't see light, you see shadow. And the solution to seeing the shadow of life only is turn one's attention to light. Really simple. And the means for turning one's attention to the light of transcendence are these very simple, very pleasing, direct spiritual practices. Starting with chanting, hearing and chanting the holy name, which anyone, everyone can take part in. And then Following from that, the desire to understand more about Krishna naturally comes, the desire to serve Krishna better, more nicely, more suitably comes. And so the scriptures are there to guide our activities. It's there for us. And it behooves us to invest a significant portion of our time regularly, if not daily, regularly in hearing, reading, discussing, churning the topics of the messages of the scripture, how to lead our lives, when confronted with a certain circumstance, how to best address ourselves to that circumstance in light of the light of the Bhagavatam, and looking at something in the light of the Bhagavatam diminishes its how fearful it may look, how intimidating it may seem to be. In fact, it just shrinks proportionately in the light of spiritual knowledge. Things that are temporary are temporary. And some things, we just let them go. Like we were having a discussion literally yesterday evening on this topic, where in order to have one of the things necessary to have nice relationships in a community, of course, one of the nicest things is the individual, I, myself, and the individuals with whom I'm participating are more pure. So let me make myself more pure so I can be a better participant in such relationships that are nice and loving relationships. And in that condition of purity, where there isn't purity, I can be an agent rather than an agent of increasing complications, an agent of increasing purity. Somehow become an instrument of Krishna to be such an instrument, such an agent, Krishna's agent. And in the world in which we live, there's so much suffering all over the place. How to be an agent of relieving of that suffering. And one of the best, if not the best, form of service is to relieve others of the material conception of life. Thus relieve them of material life. Thus relieve them of the sufferings of material life. The real solution, the root cause of our material existence is our bahirmukha jeev, our turning our attention away from Krishna, or even simpler, ignorance, the disposition of misusing free will, taking free will and taking it away from the happiness of the Supreme and looking somewhere else for that happiness. And the tendency to do like that, the tendency for fruitive activity, where I'm the one that's going to profit or become the happy individual from this fruitive activity, it's absolutely foolish. One of the things that I've been saying, repeating, the last month or so, is something that I heard Prabhupada say several times, and that is one of the primary duties and responsibilities of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct his disciples about the abject futility of finding happiness through fruit of activity. Maybe some of you have heard me say it. I'll say it again. One of the primary duties and responsibilities of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct a disciple about the abject, complete futility of finding happiness through fruit of activity. Because that represents the mode of passion. The soul coming in contact with the mode of passion. And we know what Krishna says about that. Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajoguna Samudbhava. When the soul comes in contact with the mode of passion, lust or desire, not just lust for, you know, the man-woman lust thing, lust for being the enjoyer of the resources that nature provides, trying to be the enjoyer. Kamesha, Krodesha, anger or frustration. And when people become angry and frustrated, they do angry and frustrated things. Look in the newspaper, or hear what's going on in the angry and frustrated parts of the of society. And it's not just, you know, some place over there, some place over there. It arises from contact with the mode of passion. This fruit of activity. So the tendency is to stay fruitive, even when we try to take up spiritual practice. It's because we're holding on to a material conception that the whole goal is that I become happier, which does happen naturally when you become purified. But it's another qualitative kind of happiness than the fruit of activity happiness. And how to transition between the fruit of activity happiness and the spiritual happiness. The means is provided. Hearing and chanting. And even when we do our hearing and chanting, we're still fruitive. The process is so powerful. Still we're so fruitive. We're so fruitive, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I have no attraction. I mean, devotees like kirtan. They like kirtan and prasadam, both for sure. Everybody likes kirtan, everyone likes prasadam. But when it comes to studying Prabhupada's books, when it comes to chanting japa, I chant japa because, commonly the circumstance is, one chants japa because I'm told to do so. Not because if I had some spare time, let me go find my bead bag and chant japa. I chant because I'm told to do so. And then I have to manage my time so that I can chant my prescribed number of names of the Lord. But in the case of those who have become purified through the hearing and chanting process, they look for the time to read more. They look for the time to chant more. And in a qualitative way. Just partly what inspired, there's two things that inspired this topic, and speaking about the topic of the importance of studying carefully Prabhupada's books. One of them is what happens when you do and what happens when you don't. And a lot of my service ends up helping people who don't address the consequences of having not done so. And, you know, Niranjan Maharaj calls it picking up the pieces or wiping bottoms. For those who are mothers, you know what that means. So, this, you know, there's messes that can come about just because of immaturity. And it would surely be nice if maturity could replace that immaturity. And how is that going to happen? It's not just passage of time. It's taking the process seriously. Make my life easier, please. Become very fixed in Krishna consciousness through the hearing and chanting process. And then, in turn, helping others become more fixed in the hearing and chanting process. And it solves the problems of life, literally. And then another impetus is, I just finished, was it last weekend? Weekend before last weekend? Finished the Japa retreat in Austin, Texas. Maybe it was this past weekend. Yes, past weekend. And I've never been to a job retreat. Many years ago, went to Austin, Texas because of the University of Texas. And, you know, meeting college students and distributing books and conducting programs. And, you know, that's something that I've done, I really like to do. But there was a group of devotees that they wanted to have a Japa retreat, so we said, okay. And there was a very large turnout. I was surprised because it was mostly devotees from Houston. Austin is 3 hours plus drive, and it cost some money because it was a retreat center, and I thought, I don't know how many people are going to come. But a lot of people came, about 150 plus, somewhere between 150 and 200 people. I think that was close to the number. And it was just one day of preparing, one day of 64 rounds, and then the next day of, you know, assimilating what our experience and sharing our experience. And when it came to sharing the experience, so many people, how many people chanted 64 rounds? And majority, far more than half had chanted 64 rounds. More than 64 rounds still was like a large number of hands. And how many chanted whatever number, more rounds than you've ever chanted in your life? And 80%, more rounds than they've ever chanted in their life. And what made it possible? That was really nice, including a 9-year-old girl who the most rounds she had chanted was 4, chanted 64. Just in the association, you know, think of somebody, a 9-year-old girl, what it be, you know, like 9-year-old boys, they like to play. Hardly can they sit still. They like to a little bit, and then they like to move around. In that association, so it was a very powerful experience. So how to create, that helped me think, how to create a sangha where it's not just we have a retreat in a nice retreat center, but sangha where devotees, by hearing some encouragement like this, create the situation in their lives, in the association with others, where by one means or another means, they're hearing and chanting. They're carefully reading Prabhupada's books, and there's so many systems, like abundant systems for studying collectively with others Srila Prabhupada's books. There are a number of Bhakti Shastri courses and online courses and live telephonic courses and live stream, you know, you're present and seeing through webcam and different technologies. You can see the person, you can see the PowerPoint presentation and follow along. And, you know, it's 1, 2, 3. Simple. Provided there's a willingness. So this is a stirring the willingness session and some of the persons here have their Bhakti Shastri. So then teach it, or take the next level, or find some means or another means, or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 of them, to increase that effort that you're making to receive this pablumized transcendence. Smoothing goes down good. It's real smooth. It's yummy. Krishna consciousness in the form the Prabhupada has provided it. It'll change how you experience life, literally. What's going on out there may or may not change. It will be positively impacted to some degree just by the presence of spiritual sound vibration. But most importantly, your internal experience of that will lift you above the struggle. Dorat Gyaya. Daivahi Eshu Gunamayi Mamamaya Dorat Gyaya. Mam Ibe Kapadyante Mayam Etam Karantite. by taking shelter of Krishna in that form of sound vibration, transcendental sound vibration, it carries you on the other side of that struggle. Even you're in the midst of it. Carries you on the other side of that struggle. It's mystical, but it works. And then you're in a position, like this man that was sharing about his anger problem, you're in a position to better address the circumstances that may have been provoking you and causing disturbance, because you become situated transcendentally. You're above the disturbance, and then a better instrument of Krishna to help be an instrument to help the circumstance, rather than lamenting and being in anxiety about and struggling with the circumstance. You become fixed in as an agent of the internal potency. The life around you becomes lifted by your being lifted, sincerely taking up the careful hearing and studying of the message of Krishna consciousness. The way that Prabhupada concludes this little section is also very nice. His advice in the Shravanam section is hear as far as you can in the company of very qualified, most qualified souls. And if that's not possible, then just do the best you can in your home. I've given some examples of ways by modern technology one can be remote and still hear and chant in the association of devotees through different mediums, scripture study classes. And some devotees have weekly japa classes. Some have daily. I don't know if you know this. There's a group of something like 20, 25 devotees that I'm aware of. I'm sure there's many others. Every day, for 1 hour, they wake each other up. And for 1 hour, they're chanting japa together. They'll put it on a speaker or phone or whatever they do. That technology has all kinds of gizmos to do it. And you're sitting there chanting japa in a japa retreat. Every morning. You know, like in the temple room with another 20, 25, 30 devotees. You know, that initially there's the beginning part, some inspirational message that the facilitator has selected, and they read on it, meditate on it very briefly, and then just begin chanting. Some persons can join for half an hour, some for the full hour, and check out. And if one has a desire, if there's willingness, there's so many ways to, in your life, get the association you need to hear and chant nicely when there's some willingness. And a little willingness goes a long way, because the process is very powerful. And when you become accustomed to, specifically now, Srila Prabhupada's books, the Bhaktivedanta purports, like chanting, you'll wonder, how did I do without this? Like, I remember thinking this thought some years ago. How do people do it that don't chant? How do they survive? I mean, because I can't imagine not chanting. What's that like? I know there was a time when I wasn't chanting and I was surviving, but how did I do it? How do people it's so turbulent, so challenging, so yucky. And how do you survive? No, thinking, you know, Rajiv just graduated from college and he's now out in the working world. And if college was tough, you know, the working world, what's that like? And, you know, how are people behaving themselves in the workplace? And how to, people that get out of college and don't have the sadhana of chanting and hearing, how do they manage? You know, they get beat up by the material energy and become part of the material energy, I guess. But similar to chanting, the regular reading of Prabhupada's books, it just impacts the quality of life so dramatically, differently, that once you do that, You wonder, how did I do it? Or how do people that don't do this? How do they survive? How do they get by in their life without that regulation of regular receiving, being uplifted and purified and strengthened and spiritual conception, and given the tools to certainly go back to Godhead, but also deal with the place in which we live in a reasonable fashion. Okay. Any comments? Yes. Yes. Radha Govinda Dev Ki Jai. Speak.
I was just wondering why the Lord was receiving instructions from the Supadeva's
body, had the battle Kurukshetra
battle had already happened.
Yes, Kurukshetra battle had already happened.
Did the Lord himself occur after Krishna, after the battle, after Krishna left the full God of his spirit and started feeling irregularities after
the
departure?
Yes. Yes. It's all after all those things. Yes. After the battle, Krishna left Hastinapur, went back to Dwaraka. After he went to Dwaraka, he left Dwaraka and he went to a secluded place in a forest. And then he left this world from that position. Then passage of time, when Maharaj Parikshit had become king, the Yudhisthira came to find out that Krishna had left the planet. He turned over the kingdom to Maharaj Parikshit, and then he and the Pandavas entered into Krishna's pastimes. They left the planet in their self-same body. Now Parikshit is the king, and fast forward in time, he's living as king, and then the circumstance of the Srimad Bhagavatam being narrated took place. That's the chronology. That's what you're asking, chronology?
Yes, I was
under the
understanding that it happened when Maharaj Parikshit was dying.
When he was what?
When Maharaj Parikshit was dying, he had 7 days left and was receiving.
And all that happened much, much later in time. Much later in time. That is when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, but it happened much later in time. Anything else? Yes.
You mentioned root cause.
Root cause.
I'm wondering if the heart is not purified, still have some dirt lost. Can we say that then something wrong with chanting? The chanting is not purified heart. Daily chanting,
The root, by the way, Kamesha Krodesha, Rajoguna Samudbhava. The root cause, we say, is ignorance. The root cause of suffering is ignorance, but envy of Krishna's position. Prabhupada, that's in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada writes about it in relation to Daksha. He was envious of Lord Shiva. And then later, he was same Daksha in a different body, envious of Narada. Envious of Narada because his position was the worshipper of Vishnu. And his sons had been brought to the position of worshippers of Vishnu without the Karmakanda, etc. practices. So he was envious. So that's the root cause. Now your question is, if that lingering root cause is still there, does that mean there's something wrong with our chanting? Well, you can say it, either side. Chanting can remove that, and if it hasn't removed that, there's something wrong with our chanting. And the something that's wrong with our chanting is not the sound itself, or the activity itself, but the consciousness with which we're applying it, or the offenses when chanting. So then we look to qualitatively improving our chanting. And that has the potency to remove material existence up to its root cause. And then the corollary, lust, anger, greed, etc. Yes? the answer to your question. So then we look to the qualitative way in which we chant, improving the quality of our chanting. And something that helps improve the quality of chanting is the quantity of chanting. Just share this from the feedback. These 80% people, devotees, that had chanted more than they had ever chanted in their life before, at least half, more than half, reported, you know, the initial 16 rounds were a struggle. And then some, you know, the first 32 rounds were a struggle. Like one of them said, I was looking for a realization. Like, I want Krishna to deliver a realization. I'm going to chant in exchange for a realization. That's my bartering with Krishna. And then that was not pleasant. So something shifted. They gave that up. And they started feeling, they were seeing a picture of a painting of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. And they started chanting to them, praying to them for their mercy. And then they felt this wave of mercy coming into their chanting and into them and into the room and into everyone that was chanting. And, you know, the realization that we're looking for stopped when they stopped looking for the realization. They stopped, you know, being fruitive. They're just chanting for the pleasure of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. So, and many, many others, different examples. Like, just some shift, and in part from the quantitative. So it's not like just chant quantity and everything, quality will come. But there's some correlation between quantitative and qualitative and qualitative and quantitative. And the potency is there in even every one of Krishna's name. It's our openness. And same with Prabhupada's book. Prabhupada is speaking to us. Like personalism. He's speaking to us. He's delivering this message for each one of us. It's very personal. If we read it that way, it's a different experience than the fruitive kind. Oh, I'm going to master this knowledge and then I'll learn that book and then I'll have so much knowledge and I'll be very learned in Prabhu. It's not satisfying to the heart. The message doesn't go into the heart. So there's a qualitative way to do chanting and reading. But because the subject matter itself is purifying, even the way I'm doing it is not, I'm not getting the fullness that one can receive from the process. Keep applying striving for quality and continuing with quantity. It'll come. That's faith. Faith is required.
Chanting seems so essential.
So
essential.
Chanting is so essential.
That's why we need it. It's a means and goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm adding to that the teaching, the Bhaktivedanta purports. Here's something that Haridas Thakur says in Harinam Chintamani. He says it to Lord Chaitanya. Without proper sambandha gyan, which means knowledge of the relationship of all things that come from Krishna unto Krishna, without proper knowledge of sambandha gyan, one isn't going to get the full effect of chanting. As essential as chanting is, one isn't going to get the full effect. Rajiv, can you take the lamp and pass the lamp? Someone's going to beat you to it. Sampat, you always have a question. What's your question this evening?
Regarding the fruitive mentality during spiritual activities.
Yeah.
So, I understood that chanting is very important and it will purify my heart because I have so many impurities. So, and when I become pure, then I can understand the messages I hear or read.
Yeah.
So with that understanding that I want to purify myself so that I can understand the messages properly and that will help me in
applying it.
Yeah. Apply. Is that also fruitive? Or?
Yeah. It certainly can be. You know, like I want to conquer this challenge. Kind of. That's fruitive. But it can also be non-fruitive. It can be just I wish for purification. And in that state of purification, I wish to be an instrument of Krishna. Guaranteed, in our condition, there's something fruitive. It's just a given. It's there, because we're too much familiar with the mode of passion. We know we're too intimately involved in passion, fruitive activity. So something is going to be there. So what to do? Continue strongly towards the mode of goodness side, which is, let me become pure. And in that state of purity, then I'll have more of a clue than I do today about what it means to be non-fruitive, completely just for the satisfaction of Krishna. I'm not there. I wish to come there. Let me cultivate that. Something else? Okay. Thank you very much.